Hey, Sammy. I'm sorry. I suffered a bad knee injury. So yeah,
I read it on Instagram. Does this mean you're out for the season, or do you come back for the playoffs, or what does this mean?
I'm back for the playoffs.
Okay, that's always a good sign, right? You're like magic, substituting in for Kareem.
Yeah.
Yo, welcome to my summer lair. I'm your host, Sammy. My no-look pass usually ends up in the front row, actually. First, like, four or five rows. Yunnan. Welcome back to the program, NBA sports writer Roland Lazenby. The last time he visited my summer lair, we talked about his Kobe biography. Today, we're digging into his latest NBA book, Magic, The Life of Irving Magic Johnson. This is a dense book, because it's been a dense life. This conversation, like Roland's book, starts by focusing on the historical racism that dominated so much of America's past, from slavery to civil rights. Sometimes with history, it feels like it's history, something that happened in the 1890s or something, when they still wore like pantaloons or something. In Magic, Roland documents Magic's mother, a black woman who grew up in the era of colored bathrooms. She wasn't allowed to eat at certain diners or restaurants. Yet that woman who couldn't go to a diner due to the color of her skin birthed a son who grew up to own three national sports teams. Historically, that's a wild pendulum swing from "you people can't eat here" to "I'ma buy the LA Dodgers." That's a stunningly surreal American experience. This is why America is so often difficult to accurately sum up or even bottom line. It's a country with a dream, and it provides incredible opportunities with, of course, incredible setbacks. It's clearly Magic. This was supposed to be a basketball conversation, but it became a discussion on race. Racial struggles are not something you typically associate with Magic Johnson. Roland's book has crafted a stunning context for Magic and his family. That context has made his success so much more powerful. Magic Johnson is a billionaire, the fourth athlete to achieve such a status. LeBron James, Tiger Woods, and of course, Michael Jordan. I helped Michael get there. What you are about to hear is some of that story of how Magic Johnson got to that unique status. Here's my conversation with Roland Lazenby about his book, Magic, The Life of Irving Magic Johnson.
Sound, the final frontier. My summer lair is an enterprise, a pop culture voyage with a continuing mission to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new creators and celebrate established producers, to boldly go where no podcast has gone before. And now here is your host, Sammy Yunnan.
Do you have any questions for me before we start talking about the magic of magic?
No, I think that's a good topic.
All right, it is a good topic. I do actually want to start this conversation with an observation rather than a question, which I know may not be good form for an interview, but I'm going to do it anyways. Your magic book is a head trip because you don't just acknowledge his parents, who were obviously black, and the American struggles they've had. You go all the way back to like the 1830s to plantations in North Carolina. Like when Magic was in high school, he was a black kid getting bused to school. His high school wasn't fully integrated. There was a lot of racial tensions. All of that racism and like slavery and civil rights is in stark contrast to like playing in the NBA for millions of dollars. Like I see Magic as a Los Angeles Laker, but your book puts him in the context of all this classic historical American racism.
Yeah, you know, I think that began with my Jerry West book for ESPN Books back in 2009. I was able to trace his family background. The great Pete Newell had told me once that if I ever really wanted to understand Jerry West, then I had to understand West Virginia. And so, you know, I was born in West Virginia. My old man was one of these old two-handed set shooters playing semi-pro ball in Southern West Virginia. Yet I didn't really know much about the culture, and I was astounded And you know, that was for that was something mostly available to Caucasian families to have ancestry open up windows to former lives, if you will. And when I went and did Michael Jordan the Life, I was eager to dig into that, and I was able to trace him back to his great-grandfather on the coastal plain of North Carolina, born there in 1891, and that ended up being a story. You know, it's not the easiest thing. Basketball fans, like a lot of sports fans, tend to live in a culvert or in a very insular world. They are focused on that competition. I'm coached. I know what that's like. I understand that. But biography is a big cultural story too. And I think the Jordan book obviously is in 21 languages. A lot of people around the world don't really understand race in America.
Yeah.
Now, they have their own problems wherever they live, but you know, we're sort of a strange place. We have all this freedom, but it comes with a lot of qualifiers. And so when I did Kobe, I couldn't really trace his family back into Georgia when I did my Kobe Bryant biography, Showboat. Now, he's also a person of great international interest, and Showboat, my Kobe biography, is in 12 languages. And Magic is another huge international figure. He really revolutionized international basketball as he was revolutionizing American basketball.
Correct, yeah.
And to date, I think we're in 7 languages and the translations licensed, and the book hasn't even come out. But, you know, suddenly, and this is a long answer. You can't be surprised at that if I've written an 800-page book. No,
there's a lot to talk about, yeah.
Yeah, but the data mining available today allowed me to put him in the middle of this amazing story in North Carolina, his family, in the 1830s. Now, I'm a Southerner. I'm a graduate of Virginia Military Institute. When I went to school, fourth graders had to study Confederate generals. It wasn't about looking at our great cultural diversity and the importance of all of that. And so in doing this, I was learning all kinds of things that I felt were very powerful in terms of the Magic story. And I almost felt that writing about Magic and how entertaining he is without including all that context would have been, I won't say it was like saying shut up and dribble, but I believe we're at a time in our country where we badly need to understand our historical context. And I think it gets in the way. We have a grand plan for this country. Supposedly all men are created equal, all women too.
Yeah, but there's fine print for that.
Oh, there's a ton of it. And we're fighting over whether we can even allow our succeeding generations to be taught these facts.
Yeah.
And I just thought this is such a big part because we're going to see Magic not only as this very determined young teenager, and I've coached a lot. I've seen some amazing teenagers. I spent lots of time with Magic's high school coaches, dozens and dozens of interviews. And every time I talk to somebody, still just more amazing stuff about this kid who grew into this force who, I mean, let's face it, the NBA of the 40s and 50s and 60s and 70s They really struggle to keep people interested.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, basketball has had a long road. They had a center jump after every basket until 1938. It was like soccer.
You're right. And dunking was not allowed for a while, too.
Oh, yeah. You could do volumes on just the whole issue of white fear.
Right.
And I really am hoping to liberate some white folks, too. You know, being a good Caucasian myself. Ixnay, enough already on all the fear. Come on, it's ridiculous. Let's have freedom and appreciate one another. It's not a real difficult concept, but in some ways it is because of fear. And our politicians have always played a lot on fear. But on to Magic. Mm-hmm. What a magnificent fella he was as a young guy.
Mm-hmm.
He did compromise. He had all this stuff put on his shoulders as far as helping to solve the racial issues at Everett High School before he'd even played a varsity basketball game.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's amazing.
Yeah, and I'm not glossing over like the hurt and the awful experiences to be black, especially for his parents, the constant danger and things that they faced, as you kind of alluded to. But it's remarkable that Magic's parents went from basically colored bathrooms to Magic owning three professional sports teams, the Dodgers, Lakers, and Washington football team, or he owns chunks of them. You talk about a remarkable young kid. Like, is that iron will? Is that fate? Like, how does that happen? That's just as American to like succeed so wildly like that, as much as it is racism, if that makes sense.
Oh, it is. This is hopeful. Mm-hmm. I watched him down at North Carolina A&T in a presentation to an auditorium filled with hopeful young faces at this traditionally black college and university. And his message and example are powerful. Now, he is a remarkable person.
Yeah.
Probably I didn't do enough to talk about his memory alone, but his ability to interact with people has always been just staggering.
The emotional intelligence, which is what we call it now.
It is amazing. It's the heart of so many things when you combine it with his other gifts. And, the whole business thing is almost so wide ranging.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was exhausted just trying to get all the basketball down and then to deal with the HIV. And then I get to this whole business life.
Yeah.
I mean, his life is huge.
Mm-hmm.
And, I didn't even go back and really get into. He was so afraid when he was diagnosed with being HIV positive. He was so afraid of being labeled gay
mm-hmm.
that he was doing all these things that ended up coming back and biting him. He humiliated his wife on Oprah, you know, trying to boast about his accomplishments. And then for him to have a gay son
mm-hmm.
and Irvin being the loving person he is, guided by his incredible, I mean, you just can't say enough about his wife, Cookie. She is the epitome of love.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
She's been through a lot too with Magic.
She has. And she has stood up to it with immense grace.
Mm-hmm.
For her to help Magic come to realize the full articulation of love for his son.
Mm-hmm.
I needed another year with this book just to try to tell that part of the story.
Mm-hmm.
And I put 5 years of my life into this. And
it shows. It's a really dense book.
Yes, it is. It's a dense life.
Yeah, it is. And like your previous book, Michael Jordan, The Life, I guess as much as about family as it was about basketball. So,
right.
And you already now mentioned like Cookie, you mentioned his son. Does Magic, this book, like, Does this kind of continue that trend? Like, is this a basketball book? Is this a book about race in America? Like, how do you view it? Or is it all of it above?
Well, I think it's sort of, I viewed it as my job to connect the dots. I did that at some risk. And I have to credit my publisher and my editor, you know, Ryan Daugherty at Celadon Books. You know, he questioned me. He said, you know, are we going to, we're going to want all this stuff? And I said, well, I think this is my story to tell. I have to include this. He said, you know, it might get a little tiresome for some people. I said, I don't think it'll be tiresome for my Black readers. I don't think it'll be tiresome for people who really want to know how we got where we got. Now, for the average basketball fan, yeah, I'll probably take some flack. It's an 800-page book. That's very risky to do. But to the credit of my publisher and my editor, they would challenge me section by section, and I removed lots of stuff. It may not seem like it when you look at it now, but I wanted to tell this full story. I think it's a great American story, and I think that in a lot of ways, people don't like this, but the African American story is really the story of American freedom. And Magic Johnson, to me, in so many ways, is the full iteration of all that. And yes, I'm a basketball guy. I am on top of the basketball in this. It is a full basketball story, but you don't just get the basketball story, because even basketball itself, as much as it is an insular world, it's not separate from the larger world. It is a function of it.
Yeah.
And for the longest time, basketball was imperiled by racial misunderstanding. Basketball is a sport. You know, in the late 70s, they said it's too Black, it's too inner city, too much this, too much that.
Dr. J's afro and all those kind of symbols
kind of right.
Alienated a lot of white viewers.
Yeah, you know, they wanted to integrate schools here in Virginia and Charlottesville in 1960. They just didn't want to let the Black kids play on the sports teams.
Right.
I mean, you can't make this up. You can't run from it either. And so, I'm putting at risk a lot of things here. My publisher, who paid the freight on this, was willing to do that with me. And so, you know, if it's not some huge bestseller, there are going to be a lot of people that are influenced. It will still sell. And I love to sell because that enables me to do more projects, do more things.
Right.
But I'll live with this. I would rather have this story, have found this story of Farabee, his great, 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 great grandmother on this plantation, a person with only one name, listed in the will of a very powerful slaveholder and public figure of this very powerful family. And I would rather go back to those times and then fast forward to LA or Lansing or wherever you're going. But I to look at something like the missionary Baptists in the South in the 1830s being anti-slavery, who would have guessed? I would never have guessed that.
Yeah.
And so there are so many surprises in this book.
Correct. Yeah.
That I just said, I'm not putting this on the cutting room floor. And if basketball people are fascinated by the story of his revolution, they'll read around it. They'll skip those chapters. But it really is the foundation of so many things.
So what have you learned, you, as somebody who writes these books on Jordan and Kobe and now Magic, obviously, like, what have you learned in terms of how we craft sports mythologies? There's always, like, NBA players who are unappreciated or overlooked. The way we talk about Jordan, for example, we always bring up the he was cut from his high school basketball team story, right? Like, that's a iconic moment. Like, as an NBA biographer, what have you learned about how we craft sports mythologies?
Well, you know, Jordan crafted a lot of his in his own mind. He's not that different from the rest of us. He just is better at it. Mm-hmm. You know, he really wasn't cut from the team. He just wasn't elevated to the varsity.
Right.
And they had a ton of guards on the varsity. You know, his coach, the coach who kept him back on the JV, wanted him to get plenty, I mean, like, dominant playing time. Mm-hmm. The poor man can't speak for himself because, you know, he was struck with mental illness the way most people are hit by a bus. But the facts are clear. Before Michael ever played a game of varsity ball, that same coach sat down and wrote a letter to the UNC coaches mm-hmm. and said, I got a guy here. I got a real guy that you need to take a very close look at. And so, you know, Michael is Michael. We treasure the way he harbors things and turns a figment or a fraction of a story into the motivation to jack himself to a certain level. Right. And so that's good. Magic created his own mythology. You know, he won at every level. Well, the truth is, when you look at Magic's basketball story, he screwed up like Chris Webber 50 times over, calling timeouts at the wrong time. Mm-hmm. He cost his team the chance to win multiple state championships. Of course, if he hadn't been on that team, they wouldn't have even been in the playoffs. But the point is, and those things that he did in high school, those late game mistakes he made in high school, cost him the 84 title with the Celtics. Mm-hmm. And that's all right. He's a magnificent player. He's got incredible heart. He's done all these things, but he had his own stuff to overcome. And it's not like he was some airhead in a game. Mm-hmm. He had lots of composure, but that doesn't matter. When you get overwhelmed, you get overwhelmed.
Yeah.
You know, part of doing a biography is going back and checking all the facts, because people create their own narratives. We do it to make ourselves feel better about shit that really disturbed us when we were young.
Yeah, or we gloss over certain things too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And that's fine. But when you're a public figure,
it's all on the record too.
Yeah, and you're an example to everybody else. And if you sort of make it look like you're this all-powerful figure, then how the hell is everybody else supposed to feel? Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? As talented, as unique, as fun-filled as Irvin Johnson was, he had his struggles with messing up.
Yeah.
With doing stupid things, with losing his composure. So what? It actually humanizes him and makes him all the more powerful because he has been able to overcome those things in a lot of different ways.
It's interesting you just called him Irvin. So this might be a silly question, but Clark Kent and Superman are two different characters in a sense. The same person, but two distinct personalities, Clark Kent and Superman. Is Irvin Johnson Jr. and Magic Johnson the same person?
Well, you know, I will take this back to Magic's emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. And I'm calling him Magic. He saw this in himself and would refer to it, especially once he was diagnosed with HIV. I mean, the dual nature of his different names and personalities came out. But of course, Magic was that figure in the LA nightlife, Magic Johnson. The name itself, as I referred to it in the opening of the book, you know, the implication is he had a Magic Johnson. Yes. And so he loved that, you know, he come on, he was ego tripping like crazy. And I mean, the level of women, you know, was it was his addiction. And you know, that he was riding a cultural crest. That wasn't his cross to bear alone. But that magic, that was that guy. Now, Irvin, that was the young citizen. Mm-hmm. Irvin was, he was the sweet pilgrim, I guess I'd call him, his mother's boy.
That's a good way to put it. And one of the things that stood out, and you already alluded to it, was Magic's retirement. Like Magic was one of the first ones where we've never seen a retirement quite like that. Traditionally, NBA players, when they retire, they become general managers, they go into broadcasting, some of them become coaches, many of them were coaches. But like what Magic did in terms of retirement, and I know he was playing in LA, so it made it easier, but what Magic did in terms of retirement and the things he did and the businesses he created, that's quite astounding. We had never really seen an NBA player retire like Magic before.
Yeah, it was a global shocker. Kobe and his family were in Europe. Joe Bryant, Kobe's father, Jelly Bean, was a tall player who never really got to do his thing. Although Jelly Bean was older, Magic was Jelly Bean's hero. And the whole family loaded up at the news and came home from Europe. That's what brought the Bryants back from Jelly Bean's career in European basketball. Mm-hmm. The shock. The global shock of Magic Johnson, the great smiling magician of American basketball, being HIV positive. And so the media world as it was then descended on Inglewood to the Forum for this great announcement. And it was almost like Magic was emceeing his own funeral. Everybody, I mean, it was a death sentence, you know. There were people dying right and left of HIV. Now we had
Freddie Mercury at that time too.
Yeah, Freddie had just died.
Mm-hmm. That's why it was a lot of fear too that Magic would suffer the same fate, because there was
everybody thought.
Yeah,
yeah, he was gone, and you know, we got a reminder of that in a much bigger, more grandiose, more tragic way. In some regards, AIDS has still killed millions and millions globally. Mm-hmm. But with the pandemic, what we got was a taste of unbridled fear.
Yeah.
And you know, being a human every year becomes a greater complexity, and fear grows every year. And so this study in fear, in many ways, the first great shockwave of it, whether it's environmental fear or health fear, it all sort of converges. But Magic's announcement was like that first tremor in all the shockwaves of our growing global population. And now there have been many. I don't want to overstate that. Certainly we've had wars and rumors of wars and all kinds of human tragedy. But just in terms of, it was on the doorstep of the new century. Then each new century brings another immense round of cultural complications for human society.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah.
And the 30s, you know, I'm just mindful of that. I was, you know, we all know about the 1930s and what that meant to the 20th century. Well, the 1830s. Was sort of that hidden decade that shaped the 19th century, mm-hmm. shaped the century of the American Civil War and all of the things that led to it. I guess I believe the reason I sort of stood my ground on making this what you call this dense story of a complicated person in a complicated time. I think there's more of that ahead. And I think we're better armed for that with real facts instead of facts created for political convenience.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to tell this whole story. And there are those who are going to appreciate it. I know that. There are those who are not. And I understand that. I don't, I got a guy who said, all this work I did, and I mean, I worked my tail off to track down all this stuff. But he said in one of his reviews, he says, all this stuff feels like filler, like I'm padding the book or something.
Mm-hmm.
No, I cut out months of work on things just to get it to this size. And that's fine. I should have cut where I cut. And anyone who goes through, maybe I should have cut more, but I wanted this story to be told because Magic is a figure. He didn't arrive in this in these times alone. He was brought here by the ethos of his family, a family that endured much, and in so many ways, I think you could dig into every single Black family in America.
Yeah.
And find a similar story. And that's why it is the story of American freedom. Because until we get all that straight, I don't care what pink polka dot, white, black, yellow, red. I don't care. Nobody's free until we get it straight about freedom. And you have to acknowledge the story to do that.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. It's easy for me to get on a soapbox.
No, I get what you're saying, because when a player is drafted in the NBA, they're typically 18, 19, or 20 years old. Kobe, of course, went from high school, but generally they're 18 or 19 or 20. And so you are almost watching in the movie, like you're almost sneaking into a movie theater and watching a movie like half an hour in, right? Because there's 18, 20 years before all that, before they came to the NBA, right? A lot of NBA players that get drafted, I didn't know much about Jordan when he got drafted in the early 80s. I knew he was out of North Carolina. I'd seen the shot, but I didn't know his background. I didn't know any of that stuff, right? And so, and especially because that was an older era of the NBA. So you're basically like watching a sequel of a franchise, right? His next chapter is going to the NBA, but I'm like, I don't know who this kid is. And so that's why sometimes you do need that context, especially the one provided by a biographer like you, to then kind of flesh out the story so that you know that you have the backstory, but also the proper context of where this kid came from.
And we don't know. I mean, the assumption is all these kids today are the product of it. I coached AAU. I know the process.
Mm-hmm.
I've taken a team to AAU Nationals and brought home a trophy.
Well done.
So I know the process. And it's almost like the kids today are treated like veal. That's what everybody assumes.
Mm-hmm.
That at age 12 now, they're identified. They're put on these hugely financed travel teams. And they are elevated, and all the assumptions. And every time we make these assumptions, there are always these kids who come out of nowhere. Someone like the Greek Freak, who come out of nowhere to globally,
mm-hmm.
to or in this country, they come out of nowhere to make their statement in basketball. And you know, it's a different topic, but I think we obviously always want a process. We want to streamline that process, and we want to get the top talent to the destination as fast as possible. And there are reasons for that, but it's dehumanizing. And I don't think it serves. I think there are a lot of casualties in that process. And I don't know. I don't have any answers for it. I'd have to think long and hard about it. I've been part of that culture. it's fun to get caught up in the purity of competition mm-hmm. where nothing else matters except winning. But it's not life.
So as we're wrapping up now, I want to ask you about the old school days, because you covered the Celtics in Boston during the Larry Bird days. You covered Pistons in Detroit, obviously Bad Boys, Jordan and the Bulls. You've written about that. Lakers, of course, in LA. I'm not trying to be an old man here or like succumb to nostalgia, but that era of like the 80s, kind of even early 90s, that was a really special, magical era in the NBA. Do you have the same type of sentiment? I'm not saying these were the best teams or the greatest teams. I'm saying that particular era, as these guys, Magic and Bird and Jordan, were coming in and establishing their careers and establishing their teams and winning championships, that was a truly magical era of the NBA.
Yeah, I could give you an elevator speech on that, but I think we've traveled this fantastic journey by virtue of some incredible players, augmented by a guy like David Stern, who just happened to be this pudgy lawyer who came along with a love for basketball, and he found ways to elevate the talent. It really ignited something globally. It can be a force for the kind of community and racial reconciliation, and it can be a lot of things for good. I do think certain men got control of it. I'll call them the suits. If I had to identify one, a great basketball champion, Jerry Colangelo with his Phoenix Suns.
Yeah.
They basically rewrote the rules of the game they changed the timeline. They cut down the 24-second clock. They did not do this innocently. They could not beat Phil Jackson, the hated Phil Jackson, the arrogant Phil Jackson, and Tex Winter's triangle.
Mm-hmm.
And they took the things that made the game fascinating to the world, and they eliminated them, and now they have everybody running around jacking up threes.
Mm-hmm.
The game is switching back some, but I think in a lot of ways, the game that we loved was a perfectly good game.
Yeah.
It was stolen by us, mm-hmm. by a competitive person who understood some things competitively. It still didn't get Phoenix a title.
Yeah.
And it still didn't vindicate all the things the competition committee lorded over by Jerry Colangelo. It didn't change what happened there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Steve Kerr took elements of the triangle to Golden State. We've had a singular team in Golden State that could play this way. Most teams can't. I see elements of the old game coming back.
Yeah.
Today, I'm encouraged by that. But I also did this as archaeology, not just in terms of race,
mm-hmm.
but in terms of basketball itself. It's like I was sort of digging through the dust for shards of pottery of what the game was.
That's a nice analogy. Yeah.
Right, of what integration around the game was. And I wanted to tell those stories in the little pieces of what black and white people went through to have integration and how basketball augmented that. And I wanted to do the same thing in terms of Magic Johnson's career, how he took everything. It wasn't some coach telling him what to do. He was basically shaping coaching everywhere he went.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you know, it's also the empowerment of black males in various forms that we don't think of. And it's not just the empowerment. It's the ability of black males to, given a fair chance to seize their own power for themselves. And that's what Magic Johnson's theaters are all about. That is about black empowerment by black people. And they're able to create a fantastic proposal and sell the idea for Magic Johnson Theaters. And the man who bought them knew Magic a little bit, but really not much, and was blown away by the presentation of these two black guys that came to see him to sell those theaters.
Peter Gruber.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I know I'm running hard here at the end to wrap up.
Yeah.
But I hate to see the game get so far away from what it was. I hope to see it return. I know my great friend Tim Cohn, the great triangle coach, who climbed to fix his antenna in the Philippines so that he could record Bulls games and learn the triangle. And he went on to win 20 championships in basketball crazy Philippines running the triangle. And he had to give up on it with the new rules. He went back to the triangle this year. Mm-hmm. And it's not that everybody should run the freaking triangle. That's ridiculous. But it should be that if you want to run the triangle, you haven't had somebody messing with the rules so that you can't run it, which is what has happened today, which is what the competition committee under Jerry Colangelo did.
Yeah.
And I've just, let's get back to basketball.
In your book too, you mentioned like they outlawed dunking for a while because of Kareem, right? During his college days at UCLA, yes. Right? So it's the same kind of concept of what you're talking about, where like Kareem's killing them on the inside. So let's take away dunking. And then that gives us a fair chance for quote unquote competition. But it's really kind of cheating.
Yeah, yes, it's like saying, oh, we're going to integrate the schools in 1961 in Virginia, but oh, we can't let any of the black kids play in the sports leagues. Mm-hmm. And I was, I have a friend of mine, Frankie Allen, who's a great coach, and he was a kid, and his mother, he was a kid in the schools in Charlottesville, Virginia, when that rule came in. And his mother went to the principal and said, look, and this is just a black mother standing up at a time when black mothers were, it was dangerous to stand up. Mm-hmm. She said, look, this is ridiculous that my kid can't play sports. And the principal said, I agree with you. We're going to do something about it. So the school created its own league, withdrew from the public league, which wouldn't allow black athletes. And they allowed black athletes in a school district in Virginia in 1961. Mm. And it's just little pockets of people standing up and saying, no, we're not going to put up with the same old shit. Mm-hmm. No, we're not going to play the same old games. Yes, we have some guide stars. It's a simple thing called human decency.
All right. Thank you so much, Roland, for the book. It's called Magic. Congratulations now. It's like you've written about Magic, you've written about Kobe, you've written about Jordan, you've written about their teams, the Bulls and the Lakers and more. So congratulations. It's been quite a run for you, especially as you put on Twitter that you've been covering the NBA since your 35th anniversary of your first season writing about the NBA. So 35 seasons later, that's amazing.
I didn't come to it as a young chicken, but I must say something, Sammy. Mm-hmm. I've got a quad rupture for a knee. I'm taking an 830-page book into the marketplace. It's not a tight little story about basketball. It's a big, expansive story, and I really don't have a clear idea of how I'm going to present this to the public, but I can't imagine a better interview for me to learn. I really appreciate the time and effort you've taken with this, and I assure you it's a huge help to me.
Oh, wow. Thank you very much. Before you go, though, can I ask one final question? Sorry, I know I'm taking up a lot of your time.
No, that's fine.
We've had a couple of NBA deaths recently, somewhat recently, like obviously Kobe famously in January 26, 2020. David Stern was in the same year, 2020. That's a big loss as well. But the one I'm focusing on is Tex Winter, who we lost on October 10, 2018. You knew Tex well. Like, that was a massive loss for basketball. I know it's difficult to sum it up, but can you somehow take a moment just to sum up Tex Winter's basketball contributions? They're immense. So I know this is a difficult, hard question, but it was a big loss for basketball.
Yes, I just have to say, first of all, Tex's unbending honesty, his willingness to extend friendship to everyone he met all over the world. He extended it to me. He was so eager to talk basketball, to learn basketball as well as to teach it. He was just this true pilgrim, this free spirit. He wasn't afraid to be himself. He was an old fighter pilot. He came out of that World War II generation. He embraced race. Mm. He recruited the great Bob Boozer to Kansas State. He created a team that defeated Wilt Chamberlain and frustrated his efforts with Kansas in college. Tex changed my life in an age where people, technology has, we are bullshitters, we humans, and we pile up mountains of bullshit. Mm-hmm. And the one thing technology has done, it has allowed us to multiply our bullshit into the trillions factor, over and over and over, bullshit upon bullshit upon bullshit. And Tex was none of that. And he cut through that. And so,
that's refreshing.
Oh, it was, I've had a couple of, my life has been blessed by some very powerful mentors, and that they cut through to the truth in amazing ways. One of them, when I was a young guy trying to graduate from college without a 2.0 average, later, Tex Winter, when I was a writer, I've never been a top guy. Mm-hmm. I've never been one of those guys that went to Princeton or was hired by the Sports Illustrated or hell, even any Illustrated. I've never been hired by a major newspaper, never been one of those power players. And in some ways that worked to my benefit, because I was just the guy with the press credential going around asking questions, meeting people, doing simple little book projects, the only kind of basketball projects you could usually get published and funded back in the day. But it allowed me to meet the great Tex Winter and a guy like George Mumford, the great mindfulness expert, and the guy I introduced both of those guys to Kobe. And that may be my only purpose in the basketball universe.
It's a good one.
Introduce Tex Winter and George Mumford to Kobe Bryant. Well, and if that's all I am, hey man, I'm happy to live with it. They can put any book I write in the trash bin, I don't care. But if I was able to introduce those two guys to Kobe and to help that poor, lonely, frustrated kid find his way, then it's all worth it.
Thank you so much for, summing up Tex Winter. Because I knew, like, when I read the news that he had passed away, I was like, oh, man, that's just one of those big losses. Like, obviously, Kobe overshadowed everything and, like, everyone understands and has reactions to the Kobe loss. But Tex Winter is one of those subtle losses where, like, the basketball world is a lot more poorer for him not being in it anymore. So thank you again for summing that up.
Thank you for asking that question, Sammy.
Yo, that was NBA sports writer Roland Lazenby, and his latest NBA book is Magic, The Life of Irving Magic Johnson. I've never seen Magic play as he retired in 1991. I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing. I miss most of the small shorts NBA era. Probably a good thing. Those shorts were so small and tight. I'm so grateful I've seen Jordan play, even in Detroit, where he battled Joe Dumars. Was amazing. So thankful. And I'm so grateful I saw Kobe play in LA at the Staples Center. That's a wild experience. In the conversation you just heard, Roland says Magic revolutionized international basketball as he was revolutionizing American basketball. That's my bad as a host. I should have unpacked that because this is a vital part of Magic's legacy. At 6'9", 215, 225 pounds, Magic was a significant contributor to positionless basketball. When Kareem was injured, he played at center. He dished out assists like a point guard. He rebounded like a power forward. Part of what made Magic magic is how he defined easy categorization. Positionless basketball is a revolution, not just for the player, but for the coaches who are used to one style or an established system. This is what the center does. This is who the shooting guard is. We take positionless basketball for granted now because it's so common in the NBA and on even lower level like the NCAA teams. Magic got his coaches to adjust to his positionless basketball. And that was a significant building block of how the game of basketball has continued to evolve. Thank you, Magic, for doing that. I'm a huge fan of talented individuals who defy easy categorization. And I got a foam number one finger. You know those big ones you see at the sports games all red and everything? For Magic. The ball player and yes, the actual ancient practice. I write about both and so much more in My Pal Sammy, a pop culture Substack newsletter. Join the conversation and let's talk about Magic and let's talk about Wonder and those small, tight NBA shorts from the 70s and 80s. Sign up today at mysummerlayer/subscribe. That's mysummerlayer.com/subscribe or Google Substack My Pal Sammy. Google Substack My Pal Sammy. It'll show up. I'm number one on Google. Thank you for listening to me in a Netflix world. Magic, yo.